Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and On Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your king, baby doc, Evan Borgo. You know, I can't remember the last time I regretted beginning an anime. Not because it sucks, mind you, but rather because all the episodes haven't been posted, and my need to know what happens next grows exponentially. And yet, every time I watch the show Erased, and that beautiful end theme starts playing, I find myself walking up to my TV, shaking it like crazy, and shouting, "What happens now? Tell me! Don't stop there! I need to know!" Erased is flat out fucking amazing. And I'll have a more thorough review after the next couple episodes air, but each one ends on such a cliffhanger. And I cannot recall the last time I've watched an anime that constantly keeps making my heart sink by episode's end. You'll notice that I haven't said what this show is about, and I'm doing that intentionally because even the smallest of details spoils what the show is about. So please, after you're done listening to this podcast, or pause it, I won't know, go onto Crunchyroll, Hulu, or Funimation, and start watching Erased. Seriously, it's this winter's best written drama. Anyways, enough with promoting great shows. Let's get this week's playlist going. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. Today we're going to open up the show with a song from the wolf-masked band Man With a Mission, whose backstory involves Jimi Hendrix, science experiments, and being frozen in the Antarctic. I wonder if they were neighbors of Gwar. From their new album, The World's on Fire, this is Memories.
Changing.
From their 2007 album, Kingdom, that was The Rodeo Carburetor with Candy Sunday. And joining me right now are two of my good buddies. First and foremost, he is the man of so many websites that he writes for that I can't keep count of them. Please welcome the DCD.
What the shit?
What?
Nothing. I just like saying what the shit.
Oh, okay.
And the last... DCD is the coolest name ever.
And lastly, our good buddy from the Fantastic Forum, which you can hear, I think, still on the All Games Network. I forgot to ask before we started recording. The one and only Mayor Young.
Greetings, salutations, other forms of hello. Thank you for having me back.
I know. It's been a while, and I feel so bad that it's been a while. I need to have you on our show more often, man.
Hey, it's okay, man. Really, it's... See, this is the test of true friendship here. It's not about the quantity of time, but the quality of time spent. It's all good.
That is a very good point, man. That is a very good point. So, I'm glad you guys are joining me here this week, because I feel like this whole week, the movie studios across America, probably even the world, learned a very important lesson. If you adapt a comic book into a movie in the most right way possible, meaning you don't change a thing about the character and stay true to the source material, people will actually go and see said movie.
So, in other words, don't do what Fantastic Four did.
Exactly. Because we all know Fox screwed the pooch with that one too many times, and they saw how many people wanted to see Deadpool on the big screen, and how much we were going to judge him for that. And after a long, long time of waiting, Deadpool finally was released on the movie screen, and it was more successful than people thought it was going to be. Now, studios initially thought that it had opened with a modestly successful $50 million because it's an R-rated film, and I think they might have done that ballpark because Watchmen was also opened up around the same numbers. Am I correct about that? And, you know, with Zoolander 2 opening that weekend, many people thought those would affect those numbers as well. But, in reality, Deadpool wound up breaking a ton of box office records, while Zoolander 2 just bombed.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. From what I've read in the reviews, I mean, Leonard Maltin walked out of Zoolander 2 after the last hour because it was just completely insulting. He tried to take what was left in the first film and stack upon that. Like, many people thought it was Will Ferrell's worst work since Bewitched. And that's saying something.
Jeez. Oh my god.
That is saying something.
That is really saying something.
I mean, they just said the cameos were kind of pointless and the movie was just stupid beyond belief.
Jesus Christ. That is brutal. But if it's a shitty film...
You know, exactly. I mean, going up against Deadpool, I mean, they should have known the risk in regards to that, because Deadpool was getting a tremendous amount of buzz. I mean, even with the Fantastic Four going the way it was, that didn't stop Deadpool's buzz from building up and everything like that. And then closer to its release, you know, we start to see some of the cool stuff that they did to promote the movie. Like during Super Bowl week, Ryan Reynolds was dressed up as Deadpool, serving food, chimichangas, out of a truck.
Yeah.
You know, and they turned a bar in San Francisco into the the bar that's featured in the film. They turned it into that, and people could go in and chill. Well, I mean, obviously it was for press, but still, people could go in and chill and talk to him and TJ Miller and all them. And so, I mean, they promoted it exactly the right way they needed to, whereas Fantastic Four, they just pooped it out.
Yeah, exactly. They wanted to pretend it didn't even exist, just bury it out in the back and pretend that it was never made in the first place. But let me list the box office records for Deadpool. We have R-rating opening weekend, biggest 20th Century Fox opening, biggest feature directorial debut, biggest Valentine's Day, President's Day weekend, largest January-February opening, February opening day, biggest IMAX February gross, R-rated IMAX preview, February IMAX preview, biggest Thursday night R-rated film, biggest Friday night R-rated film, biggest Saturday R-rated film, biggest Sunday R-rated film, biggest PLF R-rated opening. What the hell is PRL, PRF stand for?
Pretty really liking. I don't know.
I'm just reading what I've got in the notes here. But let's see. Ryan Reynolds' career opening weekend, holiday long weekend opening weekend, X-Men opening weekend, X-Men 4-day opening weekend, winter season opening weekend, all-time opening weekend in Russia, biggest IMAX 2D and R-rated global opening, and biggest global IMAX February gross. And the thing that sticks out for me most here is the fact that it beat every single X-Men film's opening weekend. That is impressive.
Not to mention the fact that it made more in 2 days than Green Lantern did in its entire U.S. run.
That is another true fact, man. That is another true fact. So, yes, huge success.
And here's the thing. When the studio greenlit the movie, you know how much of a budget they gave this movie? $58 million. Now, if you think about that...
Yeah, it's a lot, but...
Marvel movies, they usually cost around $150 to $225 million to produce. Depending, you know, if it's something like Guardians of the Galaxy or Avengers Age of Ultron. Deadpool was made in $58 million. So when they make jokes in the movie about the budget, they're damn serious about the jokes about the budget. Yeah. I just think the fact they could put together something that looks as good as it does and plays as loose as it does could be made for that kind of budget.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is the guy who directed it, he was like a CGI director before doing all this. Tim Miller. The work he did on this film, especially in the way that Colossus and Deadpool especially, how they look in this film, there was so much detail in the way that these characters were looking, so much detail in the worlds and the explosions, everything. You could tell that it was a smart move to get Tim Miller to direct this film.
You know, more than anything, I think what sets Deadpool apart is the fact that you can tell the love that that movie was made with. And, you know, it's like literally a labor of love for Tim Miller and Ryan Reynolds. And the fact that they've been trying to make that movie for a decade, it's like you could tell that they really wanted to bring Deadpool intact to the screen, and that's something that you don't get from a lot of superhero movies, especially if you're talking about ones from the past. And I think that's why, you know, going back to what you're saying about it having bigger grosses than all the X-Men movies, like opening grosses, that's what sets Deadpool apart from those movies. It's like, you know, a lot of studio heads were involved in the making of those X-Men movies because people knew how much of a cash cow X-Men was as a franchise.
Right.
Deadpool was something that they felt like, oh, well, listen, the people want it and you keep bugging us about it. We'll toss you this little bit of money here. Go make your movie. Just don't bother us. And they didn't bother them. And lo and behold, blockbuster.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, you know,
hopefully they understand the formula.
Yeah, what you have to understand here is that X-Men Days of Future Past set the tone for what we were expecting from Deadpool. Because Days of Future Past, sorry, mild spoiler alert, pretty much reset everything. So X-Men Origins Wolverine never happened. And if you guys remember the adaptation of Deadpool in that movie, it was a travesty.
Everybody knows it's a travesty.
So they needed a reset. I mean, they even addressed it in the film. You're like, I'm going to sew your mouth shut. And
I don't think people will like that.
I know, but you see, it set the stage for that it could be a reset. So, like, you know, Ryan Reynolds didn't have to explain how he stopped being decapitated or having his mouth shown shut. He'd just go right from scratch, be like, "Yeah, I'm fucking Deadpool."
No, absolutely,
it's pretty cool how it set the stage like that. But I really admire the fact that the screenwriters, who actually are the same guys that wrote Zombieland,
I know,
have their names exactly here. I can pull them up, but
Rhett Reese and I forget the other guy, but Rhett Reese is one of them.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up, but I mean, they wrote it with the same tone in mind, same tongue in cheek sort of tone, and like I said, they just laid the jokes bare. They joked about Green Lantern, they joked about X-Men Origins Wolverine, how awful that was. You know, they joked about budget. They didn't let loose. They even picked on Nick Fury. You know, it'd be like, why can't Nick Fury show up? And obviously, they're, you know, why, but because they're a separate Marvel entity. But yeah,
right.
Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, they had put together a script. I mean, it's been written for years, but it almost seems like it's still fresh, like the way that they put it together, because they didn't need to alter it that much at all
when
the movie finally got made.
No.
And It really is. I mean, it's hilarious as much as it is enjoyable.
Absolutely. You know, here's the thing that I love about the Deadpool movie, too, is the fact that you can talk about Deadpool. You can talk practically everything about the Deadpool movie, and yet it wouldn't spoil anything. This movie is practically spoiler-proof.
It's like Guardians that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhat. Like you can
it's like the experience is the important part. It's not what happens.
The journey, not the destination.
Absolutely. Because it's basically a straight-up story of love and revenge, but with many great jokes and references. And even just saying that, even though it can... You can kind of predict what's going to happen. It's fun getting to that point.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's bring up another example. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes!
That was another movie that was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, obviously it bombed because Universal couldn't figure out the right way to market it. But
that was
a movie that was fun to get up to the ending. You knew it was going to happen.
Yes.
And yet you still watched the movie and had a hell of a time with it. You know, I think that's the thing it was with Deadpool. Is like, we're not really worried about spoilers because, you know, we're not Avengers Age of Ultron. We're not really setting the stage for anything, although we are getting a sequel, which is nice.
Absolutely, which, you know, not to spoil anything, Cable will be in it, and
of course,
because all will be right in the comic book movie. We will get to that.
I did want to point to the one elephant in the room, and I think it is the representation of Ajax. I love the representation of Gina Carano as Angel Dust. I thought she was
great. Oh, yeah, she was great.
She was a lot of fun, and obviously, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, even Colossus with his CG-ness looked like Colossus, but Ajax, I can't help but think he was a little too standard compared to the comic book version. I think maybe they did that on purpose so that Deadpool would look more like the badass in comparison, but
I feel like that may be the case. I really
do. They could have done a little something more with him.
Well, you know, it's interesting because what I'm finding is a lot of the decisions that got made in Deadpool were because of the budget and what they could afford. And it's like,
they cut three characters out, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, they cut more than three characters out and definitely combined a lot of people because, I mean, in the Deadpool comic book, his friend doesn't run the bar. You know what I'm saying? It's like, those are two separate characters, you know? But the same way how Ajax, like you were talking about, like Ajax basically plays like three different roles combined into one, and Ajax doesn't do all that, and so it's like, but it's because you can only afford so many people, and even the people you do have, once you reduce the cast, they're like, man, we don't have a lot of, they've said in interviews they didn't have a lot of a special effects budget, so you know they kind of like doubled down on the Colossus and then kind of make everyone else a little bit more bare, and Deadpool ends up shining because of it. But it's really a thing where I think, you know, come the sequel, I think we'll see that they have a little bit more money to play with.
Oh, they are going to sink a lot more money into the sequel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, considering this movie made, in its opening weekend, it made almost five times its budget worldwide. Not including marketing, you know, and that's really saying people will see something like this and, you know, had Fox poured a little more money in it. Who knows? Wolverine could have showed up. I mean,
absolutely.
we don't know.
Yeah,
right
now.
Technically, he did show up, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I'm reading it right now. So far, the movie has earned over $333 million.
And it's going strong. There's nothing that's going to beat it this weekend. I mean, they opened up, I think the only movie that opened up this weekend was The Witch, and that's really about it. And Zoolander's not going to stand a chance.
Oh, no. I predict Zoolander 2 is going to drop from the top 10 this week.
Oh, it's gone. Yeah,
it's gone.
From the top 10? Like, maybe definitely the top five, but not the top 10.
It'll be down there.
It'll be
or it might even make number five, depending, but maybe not. I don't know. It's sad just because I'm a Zoolander fan, and I really enjoyed the first one. I haven't seen part two yet.
Yeah, me neither.
But I want to, and I'm hoping I understand it can't stand against Deadpool. That I knew. That was a foregone conclusion. I just hope it's not as bad as people are saying it is.
Well, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and they say it's a 22%.
Oh.
And this is with reported cameos of Kiefer Sutherland and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
What
the shit? Why is he in this?
Well, remember, they got Stephen Hawking to do the trailer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's,
I know.
Anyway, let's not depress ourselves over Zoolander. This is not the Zoolander podcast.
Yes, this is the Deadpool segment.
And that's another thing. While we're on Rotten Tomatoes, I did want to bring up Deadpool has an 84% rating. This is a movie that's R-rated, profane, has nudity in it. I think the greatest Stan Lee cameo ever. Can I just say it right here? And it's an 84%. It has 186 positive reviews, 36 negative reviews, obviously from people who didn't get it or thought it was waning or whatever. But that's impressive. I mean, you have to understand, I mean, not too many R-rated movies are going to get love like that, especially if they're, you know, as lewd, as profane as, you know.
That's right.
I mean, V for Vendetta got 73%. I'm sure Blade and Blade 2 got somewhere around there. But, I mean, it seems to be the highest rated one.
No, and you know what? I mean, this was a film. When I went and saw this film with my friend, the whole theater just could not stop laughing. I've never seen a reaction to a film like this probably since the first Hangover movie. Just non-stop laughing from start to finish.
It was a riot.
It absolutely was. And you know, that's the thing. I went with my sister and my brother-in-law, and they are not comic book fans. But we all saw it on Sunday and everything like that. And, you know, my brother-in-law, he's not exactly what I call the world's greatest Marvel fan. He hates the Avengers movies because he just doesn't get it. But that's it. He likes heavy metal music, whatever. So anyway, they're watching it and everything like that. And since the movie's over, like, my sister was cracking up like crazy. My brother-in-law actually liked the movie. So, you know, Deadpool seems to have that appeal even to those who aren't hardcore comic book fans. The thing I'm perplexed by, for like thousands of times we said do not take your kids to this movie, and yet every screening I went to, 12-year-olds.
Really?
There
was not a single 12-year-old at my theater. It was all like people from 18 and older, and I loved it. It was fantastic that it was a good adult comic book movie for all of us to enjoy.
You know, and that's the thing.
I can tell you.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, they gave plenty of warnings. This is not a movie for your kids, and yet kids go and everything like that. And then you wonder why parents are complaining. You'd be like, I wish there was some sort of indication that this movie wasn't for kids. Oh, you mean besides the R?
I can honestly say if I was a 12-year-old in this day and age, I would have been able to convince my mom to take me to go see Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have had to trick her or anything like that. I would have just, you know, laid it bare. Because that's the kind of mom I grew up with where, you know, she was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like, as long as we understood what was going to happen and what I shouldn't be trying to do or trying to say, even though I see other people doing it on screen, we were good. And with it being a comic book movie, I'd be like, he's going to curse, but I want, it's going to be good. It's going to be funny. And she, I would have been a 12-year-old in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if it's cool with, you know, comic book loving parents, I understand that.
Yes,
if you're bringing if you're bringing your 8-year-old because you can't find a friggin' babysitter,
oh no, that's not
your
good
damn fault.
Yes,
that's a bad look.
You know, they were checking IDs at the first screening I went to. It was like, no, we're not.
Oh wow.
Good for them. Good for them. All right, so DCD wanted to bring up a good question about who did it best, Ryan Reynolds or Nolan North?
And let me explain my question there, because for years, Nolan North has been playing the voice of Deadpool in several Marvel cartoons and everything like that, and he also voiced him in the Deadpool game that came out a couple of years ago and just got released for Xbox One and PS4. So I think it is a pretty fair question. Ryan Reynolds did technically, this is the first real time he's got to grasp Deadpool's nature, whereas Nolan's been doing it for years, you know? So there's a fair argument here, but I will be honest, for his first time out, Ryan Reynolds kicked ass as Deadpool.
He did. He did an absolutely great job with him.
And he did great with the fight scenes. The fight scenes were pretty
good.
The brawl in the car, the fact that he decapitated somebody, kicked their head at them. I mean, the fight scenes were a lot of fun in this movie. I had a good time with him. You know, everything like that. Nolan, he just voices Deadpool. I can't
remember.
I mean, he probably kicks ass in the way, but who knows?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, because it is kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of unfair, because with the budget that Deadpool, the movie, was given, compared to, say, the budget of what you could get away with video games. Because in, like, video games and cartoons and such, Nolan North can up the crazy as much as he wants with Deadpool.
And he did.
And he does. And he did. In this film, he couldn't... In the movie, Ryan Reynolds couldn't do it because of the budget. Now, with the sequel, there is a good chance that we're going to see Deadpool cooking thousands of pancakes for breakfast and shooting up chimichangas and having a bunch of tacos all over the place and riding unicorns all across the cityscape. There's a chance we're going to see the crazy Deadpool in the sequel.
Which I would actually love. I mean, we saw a good hint of that in, you know, like what he did with the unicorn in the movie.
Yes.
Or his baby hand. Jesus Christ.
I know. That
the baby hand was hilarious.
That was a great CGI
effect. You know, it feels bigger, smaller hand. but yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, Nolan has been channeling the role for years and he's done a great job with it. And he's a dedicated voice actor, so he can nail that sort of role. But I do want to give kudos to Ryan. He nailed the role and he had a good time with the attitude and everything like that. And plus, you know, he put his heart and soul into this project to get it made.
Yeah.
On a side note, we should mention somewhere down the road here how the movie got made with the leak of that viral video footage.
Yes, and it was awesome to see a bit of a redo of that in this movie.
Yeah, they saw it. I mean, the scene that was featured in that was the car brawl in this movie, but obviously there were some changes. But
exactly.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was just really impressive that Ryan was able to roll with that. Even though no one will admit who leaked it. That's the funny part. Nobody will. I mean, Ryan's like 70% sure he didn't. That's what he said. And it's going to be funny if, like, Fox ever finds out and be like, well, you know what? Never mind. You're okay.
Yeah, you made us money.
The rumor is that they're pretty certain it was Tim Miller.
Mm-hmm.
He did
the artwork. I mean, let's be honest. Yes. He's the VFX guy and everything like that. And he probably wanted people to see it because it was revealed at Comic-Con. So he thought, like, all bets were off and what the hell. You know, so he probably did something to get that leaked. But obviously it paid him for him.
No, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I mean, because what they were saying was, you know, he was a visual effects artist. He, you know, working at Blur, which Blur does a lot of amazing work. He had done work for Marvel, for Marvel Studios, you know, trying to get their stuff made.
Yep.
And so he wanted to direct this movie, and he's like damn near 50. And he's like, I don't have anything to lose, you know? So that's the reasoning and why most people are saying, like, you know, like it looks like it was him that did it, and he did it as a last-ditch effort, and guess what? It paid off. So good for him.
Yeah, it absolutely did pay off.
Sometimes you can take a risk like that. I mean, like, I'll tell you this. If Josh Trank had put together, like, a fantastic demo showing the studio exactly what he wanted to do, maybe that would have gone differently. But as it stands, they dabbled their fingers way too much in it, and they pretty much took it away from him, and it got shit as a result.
Yeah.
You know? But it's kind of
crazy. Sad.
Very sad.
Well, you know, Deadpool turned it around, though. I think now they just put Fantastic Four behind them, and they're probably going to focus on X-Men and Deadpool and X-Force. Because here's the thing. Since his movie's released, there have been rumors now that the Wolverine 3, which is coming out next year, Hugh Jackman's final go-around with the character, supposedly, will be rated R. Which
and I think it'd be great if that happens. Yes. Yes.
You know, it'd be the game, X-Men Origins Wolverine, like that.
Yes.
If only the movie was like the game.
Yeah. I'll tell you. And then on top of that, X-Force rated R. I mean, you know, bring in Cable, bring in whoever, and make it an R-rated movie. Mm-hmm. There is appeal to that. I mean, it's not just a matter of Deadpool being this one-off pony. You can make an R-rated comic book movie and make it kick-ass. Blade 2, V for Vendetta, The Crow, you know, Sin City.
Yes.
The original Sin City is not going for the sequel.
No.
God help me. But no, I mean, you can make a good R-rated comic book movie. Something that stems from the essence of the comic. And I think Fox may have just found that out.
Yeah.
Forever, you know?
It was like, hey, if we didn't like the source material, people would come and see our movie. What are the odds?
Imagine that.
Right. Yeah.
Also, I do want to give a quick shout out here. I thought Brianna Hildebrand was great as Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Oh my gosh, she was phenomenal.
She was fun. I mean, she was just a lot of fun giving him the wrong attitude. And, dude, when she started going off at the end, how ridiculous was that?
You know, Negasonic Teenage Warhead was actually another one of those. She came in to the whole movie or onto the scene
because, again, budgetary concerns and also Fox politics, because originally that was supposed to be Cannonball, and that's why her powers are kind of similar to his to a degree in the movie. And so, because, you know, in the comics, Negasonic Teenage Warhead is actually a psychic.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so, but it was interesting because I, personally, it didn't take anything away from the movie for me, which is crazy because I'm usually such a stickler about that kind of stuff, especially when it comes to X-Men. Like, I love my X-Men to look like and do what they do in the comic books. And, but I was having a good time in Deadpool that by the time we got to Negasonic Teenage Warhead, I was just like I'm down for the ride. Like, whatever happens, happens.
Well,
and it was fantastic.
Some, you know, they alter some characters, like, you know, Vision, Avengers Age of Ultron doesn't exactly look like Vision.
Yeah.
Right, that's true. But even though, Vision, I mean, obviously the origin is a whole thing unto itself.
Yeah,
once you start getting into Tony Stark making Ultron, it's like all bets are off. But the fact is, you're right, it's that same kind of concept where you're like, you know, like, we're having such a good time here, it's like, it turns out, yeah, these are just details, and it's okay to tweak them a little bit. And, you know, I guess it's unfortunate, though, because, you know, I hate, like, what I hope doesn't happen is they start trying to change things in the comics. Like, you know, I don't want Negasonic Teenage Warhead to all of a sudden pop up in my X-Men or Deadpool comics and she has, like, those powers as opposed to the powers that she's had from before.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The only reason they tinkered with it before is because I think Marvel was a little sore they didn't have the X-Men license anymore, so they were trying to do away with certain elements of it. I don't think they're going to touch Deadpool because those comics are still too damn popular.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, how many Deadpool comics are there? There's, like, almost 90 monthly comics of Deadpool.
I know. And while we're talking about noteworthy performances, Stan Lee in the strip club.
Yes. He looked like he was having the time of his
life. Let's give it up for Chastity. He was so much fun in that role. He's retiring soon. He said, like, this year will be his final year for an appearance in Canada. It'll probably be the U.S. as well. He's 93 years old, and he's still nailing these appearances. Even his Spider-Man appearances were fun, you know?
Yeah.
So, end of an era, but still, this is the way to get... I hope it gets a good one in X-Force. Like, he owns a strip club, or he's a pimp.
No, Pimp Stan Lee. I would love Pimp Stan Lee. And you know what would be funny? If, like, his little entourage are, like, on leashes, and it's the entire cast of the recent Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
His slaves. And,
another thing we should talk about real quick, I know we got a couple more topics to cover, and we're short on time, but Easter eggs.
Yes.
We saw, like, the Parker sign, the Rob-El coffee cup and everything like that. And now I was reading up today that the final battle on that ship, that is an alternate version of the Helicarrier.
From the Avengers, yes. Because
it looks like it does.
It's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep. But they couldn't use an actual Helicarrier because, obviously, legal reasons. But still, I mean, they paid tribute to it, which is great.
Yep. And then there was also, I don't know, this is kind of maybe spoiling a little bit. You know what? I don't care.
We're
Hydra Bomb!
Hydra
Bomb!
Anyway. Yeah, Hydra Bomb. I mean, he was Bob.
So good, man. We're like, Bob?
For the TGI Fridays? How are you? Yeah.
Headbutts him unconscious.
All right, so two more questions. Your favorite Deadpool one-liner?
Oh, God. How do you even do it?
No,
there's so many.
There is, but my favorite is literally just one word out of the whole thing. Dad? Honestly, that got the biggest laugh at the movie theater when he hits him in the crotch and he just says dad, and, like, the whole theater just burst out laughing harder than anything else.
See, for me, it's when he called Colossus a cock gobbler. Big metal cock gobbler. Although there was another one, I didn't quite get it, and I still think it's a little bizarre. It's like when he's in that dude's apartment waiting for the pizza guy, he's like, whose litter box did I just shit in? And everybody's just perplexed and everything. He's like, Anyway.
Yeah.
Couldn't figure out what it is, but it's a curious joke.
Yeah. Dude, you know, I think for me, I mean, it's hard to pick one line,
no.
But I guess for me, I kind of like when he put Negasonic Teenage Warhead in her place and, like, kind of did the line where, you know, talking about how, you know, so what's it going to be, friggin' Long Sullen Silence or the friggin', you know, Negative Quip or whatever, you know? And she's kind of like, kind of got me in a box here, you know, like you know, cause, and I just, like, you know, I just loved how, I mean, which is just indicative of the whole movie in the sense that it plays on every trope, you know. It's just like, not only is it like making fun of the tropes, but then it still does the tropes, it makes fun of the tropes, and then makes fun, like, you know, breaks the fourth wall and makes fun of the fact that we're making fun of the trope, and it's just like, oh man, it's too good.
Oh my god, we broke 16 walls.
16 walls, but there's another one. McAvoy or Stewart?
Yes, that was another
right.
big
that
one.
That was
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah,
so classic.
All right, so the final question: what do you want for the sequel?
You know what? This is probably where we're going to wander into the territory talking about who should play Cable, because obviously Cable's coming at the end of the movie. I love the whole Ferris Bueller sequence; that was amazing.
Yes,
really, mm-hmm. that's the best way to go. And he already confirmed Cable. Now, we have so many people on the table that could play Cable. And I rhymed and I didn't even know it. I'm a poet and I don't even know it. but no, I mean, you know, some people are talking about, like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan from Watchmen to be, mm-hmm. you know, Ron Perlman. I think Ron Perlman's got too much of a chin. And plus, I remember him so much as Hellboy anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, I wrote that. You know what I mean? Let's see who else.
I know. Rob Liefeld was saying that he wanted John Hamm to play Cable.
Yeah, John Hamm got mentioned. Kieran Knightley. That's an interesting choice.
That is
they
interesting.
They even came up with concept art for it.
Yeah, someone did. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it actually looked really good. But I feel like, not to sound sexist or anything like that, but I feel like Cable needs to be a dude in the second one. Maybe there could be, like, where they go to an alternate universe and Keira Knightley's playing female Cable, and then there's, you know, Gwenpool or whatever, whichever female Deadpool that's out
there. Yeah. But I'll tell you this. If we're going to talk about a definitive choice to play as Cable in Deadpool 2 and X-Force, there's one guy. I've been campaigning for this guy, and he knows he's a fit, too, because he put it on Twitter that he's laying down some Cable. And I'm talking about Stephen Lang, who previously appeared in Avatar and Into the Badlands.
Yes!
This guy, I think, would be a perfect fit for Cable. And people are saying, no, he's too old. I'm like, look at him.
Yeah, look at Cable. Cable is old.
He looks like Captain America's dad. Okay.
That's hilarious. He's definitely not too old, because Cable is an older guy anyway. It's like, you know, and he looks fantastic. I mean, I think he would be a good pick. I mean, the guy is a great actor.
Uh-huh. No, that is the guy who I want as well. I want Stephen Lang to play Cable. And I wouldn't be too surprised if Ryan Reynolds and Tim Miller and the whole gang is like, yeah, he'll be the first to get the script when it's done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, having him involved in the movie would be a lot of fun. Obviously, Ryan would come back, TJ Miller would come back, and they could probably introduce somebody else from the villain's guideline, you know, somewhere in there. And you know, they could even throw in, like, a few more X-Men. You know,
yeah,
especially
what's the,
that Apocalypse is coming out in a few months, and I still have concerns about that.
A little bit. Yeah. But who was the main villain in the Deadpool video game? Because I feel like he should be the villain in the second Deadpool.
Mr. Sinister.
Mr. Sinister should be the villain for the second Deadpool
now,
movie.
Now, John Hamm should play him.
Yeah!
John Hamm.
That is the
really
perfect
cool
guy to do it.
Yeah. I think he would be a lot of fun as Mr. Sinister.
No.
Just saying.
Okay, so for me, I just have two simple requests for the Deadpool sequel. And I know DCD knows what the first one. It is, I want a teaser trailer where Deadpool and Cable recreate the opening to Perfect Strangers.
Oh,
that's too good!
That is
damn
too
it, good. I want to see that too now.
Either that or Full House with members of the X-Men.
Oh, that is a good
boat. No, the Love Boat, where it's Deadpool being taken away by a lady. Come back.
Oh,
there's Cable.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, that's your place.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. And the second thing I want is I want a montage scene of the duo eating ice cream, playing catch, and riding a tandem bicycle to Queen's You're My Best Friend. Nope.
Riding a unicorn.
Okay, because I do understand the unicorn, but just imagine someone big and bulky as Cable on a teeny tiny tandem bicycle with Deadpool in the front. Come on, picture it.
My friend.
Picture that in your mind. How funny that would be.
I'm going to stay behind my endorsement of the Perfect Strangers opening and leave it at that.
Okay. Or Full House.
Or Full House, yes. And what about you, Mayor Young? What do you want from the Deadpool sequel?
Man, you know what? It's I won't lie to you. Like, I came to the end of this movie, and I kind of was like, I almost wish they don't make a sequel, because I'm not 100% sure they're going to be able to capture this magic again, you know? It's like, it's not like, and it's not to say that Deadpool's a one-trick pony or anything like that, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's such lightning in a bottle, and it's like, you know, it'll be hard to recreate, but anybody can do it, it's Tim Miller and Ryan Reynolds, I think.
Yeah, they could pull what Phil Lord and Chris Miller did with 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street.
But
you have to understand, some sequels should never be made later.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
but if we're talking about, you know, what I'd really like to see, I think I definitely want to see Cable, which we're getting. And if they... I just want to see a good bit of either work laid for X-Force or a good transition from X-Force, because like the issue that I'm worried about is like I feel like I don't want a Deadpool to become the center of an X-Force movie, even though they'll probably go with the incarnation of the team that he was on, because of course Deadpool's huge now.
Right.
And it's like, I want the transition from one to the other to be like smooth, because obviously Cable is associated with X-Force, but he's not associated with the same X-Force that Deadpool was on. And so it's like, I could totally see Fox execs starting to dip their fingers into the pie, and then all of a sudden we have some kind of hodgepodge, weird X-Force team that's like, ugh. And it's like, that could bleed into Deadpool or bleed from Deadpool, and I don't want any blood in my Deadpool.
Right.
so, you know, I mean, that's, I guess I just want to see Cable and X-Force handled well in the sequel for Deadpool, if they're going to do that, which they are.
And honestly, because of the success of this, I feel like Fox realizes how important this franchise is. They know that they screwed the poach, they fucked it up with Fantastic Four, and now they're going to be like, we cannot go that same route again. No more Fantastic Four-ing it, no X-Men Origins-ing it, no more X3-ing it. We have these characters, we have the license to them, let's be truthful and faithful to these characters. And the Deadpool movie is proof that they could actually get that done.
Yeah. I mean, they captured lightning in a bottle at just the right time, and they needed it, too, because Fantastic Four left all these doubts whether, you know, 20th Century Fox could know what to do with a Marvel movie again, even after X-Men Days of Future Past. You know, there were all these concerns that the movie would not live up to the hype, because let's be honest, new heights have been set for comic books. You know,
especially with
a lot of people seeing Age of Ultron as a disappointment last year. I still enjoyed it, but
I still liked it too. Maybe not as much as the first one, but it had a lot of great moments.
Heightened expectations.
Yes.
Exactly what that's about. So, yeah. I mean, now that they have a better understanding of what works with Deadpool, I think they're going to try to work harder to be closer to the source material. They're not going to touch Fantastic Four again, probably for several years, you know, until they have an idea of how not to fuck it up this time. But, you know, they're going to stick with Deadpool, they're going to stick with X-Men, they're going to introduce X-Force, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
And we can only
hope
for the best. Yes, New Mutants.
But that you said it best right there, DCD, with the expectations gain, and you know, it's like the only reason people didn't like Avengers: Age of Ultron the same way they liked Avengers was because they did it already. Like, you can't recreate that kind of anticipation, the build up for all of Phase One to culminate into the Avengers movie, and then you're like, oh well, I want to feel that same way again. It's like, you can't. You just can't do it. It's like, you know that those characters are going to come together again. You know what it's like to see them all in one place because we did it already. And it's like, you know, it's basically like, you know, it's like trying to mess around and be like, I want to feel the way I did the first time I skydive or skydove or whatever. Or
right.
And yeah, it's like you can't capture that again. So, you know, Age of Ultron was a great movie. It was fun. They gave us new characters. And it's like Deadpool, amazing. I'm hoping the sequel only has to be half as good as far as I'm concerned. Because I haven't laughed that consistently in a movie for... I can't even imagine. Like, I think maybe you're right. Maybe the original Hangover was the last time.
Yeah, like,
I
left that...
But all I know is... I don't even need to laugh that much in the second one because my muscles can use a break.
Yeah, like I can't remember the last time I left a theater where I could barely talk afterwards because of how hard I was laughing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I don't think I've had this much fun with a comic book movie since Guardians of the Galaxy.
Same here. So for our listeners, if you haven't seen Deadpool yet, and you are at least 17 years of age...
or have awesome kids that understand how comic books work.
Exactly. Go and see it. See it twice. See it thrice. Eh, just go and have fun. It's one of those movies where you're going to have to see it again because you missed a bunch of jokes from laughing so hard at the previous one.
Right.
So... DCD, Mary Young, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders or Race. Do a little promo magic for me there. And Mary Young, you go first.
Okay, cool. You can go ahead and catch more of me on Fantastic Forum on allgames.com. We broadcast live on Wednesday nights now, 6:30 Pacific. Feel free to jump on. You can catch us on Skype. You can catch us in the chat room. You can participate with us. It's not just to listen to, it's to interact with. So feel free to get Fantastic Forum Wednesday nights on allgames.com.
And DCD, you go ahead.
Yeah, you can find me at twitter.com/theDCD. You can also find me on Facebook, and you can find my work at Game Crate. You can also find my work at A-List Daily and Prima Games and Opshead.com. And I also do occasional reviews for Marooners Rock. I'm everywhere.
Yes, you are. Yeah, you are literally ridiculous. And DCD, I will totally see you at PAX East in a couple months, right?
You will see me at PAX East in a couple months, yes.
Yes, awesome. And Mayor Young, probably at E3, correct?
Probably so.
Sounds good.
I, unfortunately, I missed you the last time I was in Boston. But
no,
next time.
No, remember we've met...
No. No, I'm tripping. Look, I only got to see you the one day.
Yeah, you saw me the one day.
I was thinking we could get to hang out... more, but
yeah. We'll hang out more. We will totally hang out more. We'll make up for lost time, dude.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. So to continue on this Deadpool trend, we're gonna play a song from the movie. In fact, this particular song was a remake of a rap done for the Deadpool video game. So from the Deadpool movie soundtrack, here are Team Head Kick with Deadpool rap movie version. Deadpool.
Fast. Came to murk the bad guys and get some ass. Got blades for days, got guns galore. Got combo moves, evades and more. With bear traps and hand grenades. Pull the pistol like a maniac right in your face. Popping off caps, leave a trail of guts. Sitting on my chair, scratching my nuts. Don't stop when I shoot for what it was on. Your ass is grass and I'm on the lawn. Hot lead to the head and I won't stop. What your crew gonna do when I hack and chop? All these bitches are prima donnas. I stuff my face with Jimmy Chongas. Tacos and beers, always keeping it loose. Hang on for a minute while I'm dropping a deuce. Deadpool. Nah, just Deadpool. Merc with the mouth, I can't die. One foot in in the grave, but I'm still alive. Try to kill me, I'll just revive. Then I'll put another bullet right between your eyes. I'm dangerous, feeling reckless. Squeeze your neck like I was a necklace. Jump, flip, and leave them headless. I like my guns all big like Texas. Hey, goons, thugs, and bosses. Guess what? I brought Colossus. Time's up, better count your losses. Kicking that ass as my girlfriend watches. Run away, you know that I'll chase every bad guy, put them right in their place. Revenge, I'm gonna give you a taste. I'm sexy as hell, but I cover my face. About to take you all to school with guns and knives. Telling jokes and breaking the rules. I came for the tacos. Playing with the ladies and the family jewels to bust a nut. About to throw down with all these fools, so come and get some. Bring the noise, I'll bring the pain. Ha! Kicking ass and taking names. Payback time, I'm not playing games. These superpowers are feeling strange. I move like a friggin' ninja. Hand to hand, you know I'll inch ya. Got two swords, now I'll avenge ya. I don't care if I offend ya. Listen up, I got something to say. That's right, I run my mouth all day. Step up, take a bloodbath. Now you're trying to run and it's making me laugh. Ha ha ha, where you gonna go to? Try to hide, but you know that I'll find you. Tippy toes, sneaking up behind you. I'm Deadpool, do I have to remind you? Regenerate, because it's cool when I fall off a ledge. Deadpool. The crazy ass guards are looking to duel, so click, click, boom. Deadpool. I don't believe in the golden rule, I came to get laid. Deadpool. Note to the ladies, I'm not a tool, I'm a sexy motherfucker.
Sexy motherfucker.
Yeah.
Our favorite gal, Tsushima Mire, with Grapefruit Girl from their 2011 album, Giving Blood. This March and April, Tsushima Mire will be touring with their pals, P-Lander Z, in the United States. So be sure to check their official Facebook page to see if they're coming to a town near you. Joining me now is the CEO and creative director over at La Cosa Entertainment, who just recently released their debut video game on the PS4. Klaus! I've been playing it this past week, and so far I am convinced that it's going to be one of this year's best indie titles of 2016. Please welcome to No Borders Erased, Mr. Victor Velasco.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me here.
I'm very happy you can join us on this show. So, tell us a little bit about La Cosa Entertainment. How did this gaming company of yours come to fruition?
Actually, everything started like about 2 years ago. We just did this demo of Klaus, like three of us. And it was for this Square Enix Latin American contest. It was for smartphones and you know, web devices and things like that. And we just won the second place. And after that, we realized, okay, how about if we just aim a little bit bigger? How about if we just make this game, like, properly? And because before it was for smartphones, it was touch controls and it was something like that. And then we realized, like, no, we want to aim a little bit bigger. Like, we want to do more, like, the games that we love. So that's why we started developing a Klaus when we received the PS4 dev kit and all of that.
That's awesome, and congrats for winning the second place on the Square Enix contest. I want to get in a little bit more to that, but I'm curious about you personally, Victor. What inspired you personally to jump into the video game market?
Oh, that's actually an interesting question. I'm a system engineer, but also a filmmaker, so I have been always with this, you know, duality of, should I go more for the artistic or should I go more for the system engineer side, you know, databases, all of that. And I realized, you know, I've been a gamer, like, since I was a kid, playing Mega Man, I don't know, Super Mario and all these great Castlevania, you know, all these great NES titles. And then I realized that you can find this middle term in the video games, you know, you can be like a software engineer, you can go in through coding and through programs, but also being artistic, you know, have like a passion, have something to say about the world or it's some personal experience or things like that. Yeah,
right. And with like the way the games are currently made, you can add filmmaking sort of story to it to give it that extra punch.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we were aiming with Klaus. We are using a really minimalistic color palette and everything. We're trying to be really elegant with, like, I don't know, specific fonts and things like that to really make it stand out with as little as possible, you know?
Now, you did mention about the filmmaking thing, and I'm curious, was Klaus at a time like a film idea that you had before you turned it into a video game?
I have to be honest, like, a lot of film ideas that I had are in Klaus. And in fact, it's great that video games, I mean, you don't have to think about, for example, finding the right actor or the right actors, you know, you can just make the people play with them. So that's what is really great about video games. And just thinking more about, you know, to translate personal experience into video games. That's what we were aiming with Klaus. So a lot of things of Klaus are, or ideas that were, you know, in the air while we were doing the game, or some personal things. So definitely I can relate with a lot of themes that are in Klaus.
That's awesome, man. Now, we did mention a little bit about Square Enix, how it was part of a competition. So, was it like when you won the second place, was it right there and then when you knew that Klaus was the best way for La Cosa to make its grand entrance into the gaming industry?
It was, yeah, it was like our strongest idea so far. And, you know, it was something that was really resonating with us at that point, because this is a little bit personal, but I was a system engineer. I was a, how do you say it, like a, I was in an insurance company, right?
Oh, yes.
you know, working with databases and things like that. And I felt a little bit like Klaus, I have to be honest. Like, it was a great place. But, you know, you feel sometimes like you're just one more gear of this big clock, you know, that you are just one number, a replaceable number in the system. So we try to be a little bit subversive from that perspective in Klaus, you know, trying to put something personal in there.
No, I could totally get you on that, man, because not to go in too much so my listeners don't know, but like the job that I have where my non-podcasting game review stuff, that I sometimes feel the same way too, that I can, that I'm just a cog in a giant sort of clock that is the big giant company that I work at, that I don't want to like tell people where it is I work at, but let's just say it's probably one of like the worst places to work.
I totally understand that feeling. So yeah, we try to put that in Klaus.
Yes. Now, for our listeners, because I know about what Klaus is about, but I'm not sure if any of my listeners know what it's about. So tell us the story of this man who wakes up with the word Klaus on his arm.
Well, basically start with this guy who, as you said before, he wakes up in this basement and has no recollection of who he is or where he is. And after a point, he just realized that he's being controlled by someone, you know, that they... that it breaks the fourth wall from that perspective. That means that he's aware that you, the player, are controlling him through the game, you know? So we create, like, this relationship, this friendship, this love-hate relationship between the player and the main character through the game. And it's a 2D puzzle platformer, you might say that, but we're trying to make it more accessible than games like, I don't know, for example, Super Meat Boy or things like that.
Yep.
Because it's a really story-driven video game. So from that perspective, we don't want, like, you know, to lose the freshness of the story if you are have to just repeat a task over and over again and just having fun while you play it, right? So in his journey, Klaus will just... it's really, as I was saying before to you even, like, it's really hard to talk about the game without spoiling a little bit, but he will find some other people, some other characters, and we're trying to aim to have, like, always some kind of surprises, you know, in the game. Even if it's, for example, a new mechanic, you know, you will find something new in every corner. That's what we are trying to do. Through his journey, Klaus will find, I mean, that's what his tattoo says. He doesn't know his actual name for sure. He will find recollections of his past, you know, just to know who he was. So in these kind of bonus stages, there are crazy things like, for example, he just has to go left, and if you press right, he will just go left, and he will not pay you attention at that point. And these bonus levels are were like our free card, just to do whatever we wanted, just to be free. And for example, there are bonus stages that there are two Klauses at the same time, you know, or
right,
things
right.
like that.
And I did come yeah. across one of those levels. I believe it was either in the, I think it was in the first world where I came across that sort of level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you made a great point, which is like. What I and then something that I do love about Klaus is that there is enough of a challenge within the puzzle elements to keep your brain working, but unlike in like something like Super Meat Boy, it doesn't reach that level of frustration that some puzzle games like to do. And I really appreciate that you actually go out of your way to make sure that you have yourself a good time playing a game because you want it to focus more on this story. And I just want to give you props for actually doing something like this instead of just boosting it up all the way to the most difficult mode and making people feel frustrated while playing it.
Yeah, it's because we put so much effort on the story that it will be a shame that if the people don't enjoy it. And also, this hits me personally as a gamer as well. Like, I love Super Meat Boy. I completed it, of course, not with all the trophies and all of that. But I'm a regular platformer. I'm not like great, so I spent like around 4 months, 5 months just to complete Super Meat Boy. And then I realized like we just wanted to make something more accessible. After you finish the first playthrough of the game, you have like an arcade mode and you can just beat records, and it's more competitive and more for speedrunners, if you see it in that from that, if you want a challenge like that. So it's not like we don't like challenge, it's just that, you know, we prefer to that people enjoy the story, and if they after that wants to keep going with the game and be more hardcore gamer for saying a way, they can do it, you know.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I know we also touched a little bit about this, but right now I'm at around, like, the third part of the game. And, like, whenever I'm playing Klaus, I have this... I'm starting to have this sort of mentality that I feel like there's something not right. Not just with the world, but with you yourself, the player. Because he's talking... Because the guy who doesn't know his name, he's talking to you. And he... And you're controlling him at the same time, and I feel like there's something wrong about this. And my question is, am I right to have this sort of feeling as I play it?
Then we just see it, because that's what we wanted to you to feel at that point in the game. So I just have to tell you this, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the last third of the game is like our favorite part. Like, so there are going to be like a lot of things happening. We tried... You know, we always had this feeling of, okay, a lot of games just start really well, but then in the middle and in the end, it just, you know, the pacing goes off or something like that. Yeah, but in here, I promise you that you haven't still played your favorite level yet. So, yeah, I can tell you that, like, in a narrative and in a gameplay way.
All right, because I am really very much looking forward to see what's going to happen more within the game. Now, with the PlayStation 4, you're using the whole touchpad aspect, because initially, like you said, this was originally a mobile game that you had made for this contest. Did you know that with the touchpad, did you know that the PS4 was going to be like the perfect place to give Klaus its premiere?
Yes, actually, it was more like we were trying to explore the full software. You know, at first we were trying to not use the touchpad at all. But I honestly, the first time that I received the PS4 dev kit, I didn't know that the touchpad existed at all. You know,
yeah.
We were just I was just inputting my name into the console, and I realized, oh, it has a touchpad in there. Why no game has used this, you know, so far? We just try to explore and make a different experience. We know that, like, the platformer genre is really competitive right now, because there are a lot of great, awesome games on the stores, on different stores. And we try to make something that really distinguishes us from the rest of them. Also, like, I don't know if you have noticed, but everything in the game has a reason. We could have just say that the touchpad is a superpower that Klaus has to, I don't know, move things. But we wanted to make it personal, you know, that you can interact with the story, that Klaus is aware of you. And even in small things that we learned while we were developing, for example, if I don't know if you have noticed, but when you change from world to world, the controller changed the color, or for example, Klaus speaks to you through the controller, or small touches like that. That I think that it helps the immersion, and more than that, just to make something different, you know, to even if might not be successful at all, it's just to try to think, oh, how about if we do this? How about if we do this? And, you know, get out a little bit of the bubble.
No. I love those little aspects, because, like you said, it's all about the immersion of the game that it wants to bring to you. And I do want to give you more props because of you using the touchpad, because these days, whenever I play a video game, whether it be the title or even like a AAA title, most of the time the touchpad is just used to push to like access the main menu or something like that. So I'm glad that you actually went out of your way and gave the touchpad on the PS4 a purpose for once.
No, we're glad that you like it so far, because we put a lot of effort to it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Now, my question now is, because you are currently working on this game for the Xbox One and PC, so how do you plan to replace the touchpad aspect for these platforms?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. We're actually just going into different, tests just to check how it goes, but probably one of them is just using R3 as when you press it, then you have the icon right there, and then you can select the actual platform. So we have things like that, but first of all, we just want to, at least for example, for Xbox One, we just want to first receive the dev kit and check what it's special in Xbox One. Maybe we can figure out something new for that version. So that's, as usual, we just try to do as much as we can with the console that we have at that point.
Excellent. And then, you know, the more that more consoles and more platforms you release it on, the more you can expand, like, the gamer reach. So hopefully it all works out for you in the end.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. So I know you touched a little bit about this whole arcade mode, because I haven't unlocked it yet. So with the arcade mode, you talked about how it's going to, how it is more for the hardcore gamer aspect. So what sort of things are you going to be able to do in the arcade mode, or whether, what is it that the arcade mode is going to deliver for the player?
Actually, because I mean, we talked really briefly, but in the game there are these collectibles that you find one in each level, and it's really important for the story, right? And yes, also for the game. You will see it later why. So in case that you, as you might know, in the game you can never select a level, because we try to make it like a metaphor of life. Like, you can never go back. You can never go back to the previous stage. You can never go back to the previous level of your life, for putting in some perspective.
Oh, wow. And, but I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, yeah, we were thinking about, you will notice some of these things later, but basically, when you unlock the arcade mode, it's like, okay, now I'm free, I'm in my video game, and now I can just select every chapter of my life. So I can go back and just get all these collectibles that I missed before, because they are key for the story and you know, for I don't want to spoil anything. But the, right. And also, we have this kind of time attack modes that we have, like, a target timing, and if the player beat it, they get, like, you know, trophies and things like that. Yeah. So in order to get the full platinum of the game, you need to go to the time attack mode and get over all these time attack records. Like, some of them are really hard, but still, like, we have seen people getting platinum, so it is definitely possible.
Awesome. I can't wait to jump in and see what it's like over there. I know you released Klaus just a couple weeks ago, and my question is, how has the feedback been for you guys, not just from, you know, the critic perspective, but from the fans as well, from the players, the actual gamers out there that have been playing this game? Like, what sort of comments have you been receiving from them?
It's great, because we're learning, like, more from the industry every time that we're in. And for example, at first, I will be totally honest with you, when we released, for example, the trailers and things like that, the people were like, oh, in this Station 4, oh, what year is this? It's like 1992 or something like that. Why am I playing this in a 1080p console and things like that?
Internet
so we
trolls.
Got a lot of that. Yeah, exactly. But like a bunch. Like, it was insane. That really discouraged me, but it's fine. And then when we release it, like, we are having, like, we think that Klaus might not be like a big hit right now. It might be a sleeper hit from that perspective, is when the people give it a try, that they will say, oh, there is, you know, something different than another platformer or another game. And so it's like that. The first, the people were like, okay, in this Station 4 and all these comments. And then they were like, okay, there is something different here. We love your game. And we sometimes receive mails saying, like, it's like the best game that they have played on PS4 or things like that. So it is really gratifying for us. Like, for example, I dig the music of the game as well. So sometimes the people were asking, like, okay, where I can find the music? It was really great. It was one of the best platformers that I played in the recent years. So that's really taking in mind that, I don't know, every year there is like a great platformer, like, I don't know, Shovel Knight is a good one, or and it's Balloonsky and all these amazing games. So it is great that the people, you know, put us in the games that really inspire us to make games from the first point. So.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning the soundtrack, because I think the soundtrack is amazing in this game. And I'm curious, is there a place for our listeners to even check out the soundtrack? Is there like a Bandcamp or a website or anything for them to be able to listen to the game outside of the actual game itself?
Yes, actually, you can hear the complete soundtrack for free and in the Bandcamp. It's not the whole soundtrack. It's like a selection of tracks. We're going to be releasing it because I need to master them and all of that. So, but like the first volume is online. You can buy it if you want, but if you just want to listen to it for free, you can listen it for free online. So, yeah.
Very
it's
cool.
In there. I will send you the link for sure.
Oh, nice. Thank you, dude. So my final question for Klaus is, because I know you said you're hoping that more people get to play this game. So I want you to convince my listeners, because you've already convinced me, but I want you to convince my listeners why they should play Klaus. What are they going to get from Klaus that they're not going to get from any other game that's coming out this year?
Yeah, that's like a good one, actually. I think that it, I don't know, the people should play Klaus. I mean, that this is what we were aiming for, right?
Yes.
Just an experience that it will last like 6 to 8 hours with non-stoppable surprises, and it will not waste your time as a gamer. You will not have this feeling of, why am I doing this? You know, it's more like, what is the next surprise? What is going to happen next? That's what we're gonna, what we were aiming for, just to create an unique experience and to create a one of the few narrative platformers out there. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Now, I know you just launched Klaus, but I'm curious, what is up your sleeve next in La Cosa Entertainment? Is there already something that you guys are working on that you're planning to be the second title?
We're a small team right now. We're like 8 people doing the game, but
right.
While we're handling the ports, because we don't need the whole team to do the ports, we're thinking about new ideas for sure. Like, we have a couple of them. We might even want to release an app as a short film just to try to experiment. So this experimental vein, it's really gonna be on the next games that we will be releasing for sure.
Well, Victor, let me tell you something. I am really looking forward to seeing what you guys are going to be planning next, because if Klaus is the first thing you guys are doing, then I've got a great feeling that you're really going to be getting a lot of people's attention with a lot of the stuff that you're going to be planning to do in the near future. And I think Klaus is definitely going to be one of those games that, you know, from what I've been playing right now, it's definitely a game that I can see myself putting on a top 10 list at the end of the year. It is that good, and I think you should be really proud of yourselves for creating a game like Klaus.
Thank you, Ivan. Right now it's really easy to, I don't know, say thank you and all of that, but I really say it like honestly, because we have been working this game for 2 years without knowing if it's good or if it's bad, you know? Sometimes that happens when you create a product, like, okay, but is this good, or this might just like to the 8 people that are involved in this game? So it is great and satisfying that, you know, having these comments for sure.
Yeah, and the game is Klaus, currently on the PlayStation 4 for $19.99. For the love of God, people, please go and download it. It is definitely going to be one of those games that's going to stick with you throughout the entire year. And just for our listeners, where can people find out more information on Klaus and on La Cosa Entertainment?
Yes, for sure. We have our website, klausgame.net, and as you might know, I just have to be real aware of that. My English is not perfect. I have this strong accent. I know that. We have our Twitter at La Cosa Ent. So that's basically it. And la-cosa.net for sure.
Victor, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. Best of luck to the rest of your team. And seriously, you did an amazing job with Klaus. And for our listeners, you can be sure to check out a full review of Klaus sometime in the next few days on the Electric Sisterhood website. And Victor, excellent job. You did such an amazing job with this game.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right. Coming up next, we've got some Shonen Knife to serve up for all of you from their 1997 album, Brand New Knife. This is Power of the Sun.
Shining face, 60 feet tall.
British rocker Savages with Slowing Down the World from their new album, Adore Life. They'll be hitting the U.S. very soon for a tour, so keep your eyes peeled to see if they'll be coming to a town near you. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa-sensei for her Nazo Nazo Nyongo segment, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bash Brigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And don't forget about all the other websites under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, The Structure Network, and Nerd Craze. Also, be sure to check out our Twitch page at twitch.tv/OmNistryInc. That's OmNistryInc. I'm hoping to do a couple more games very soon, so keep your eyes peeled for any sort of announcement. We're going to end the show with a little bump of Chicken, who just released their latest album, Butterflies. And from that record is a nice little ditty that goes by the name of Kodoku no Gassho. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.